Welcome.
Welcome.
Welcome to the Think Orange podcast.
A podcast with ideas and conversations to help you influence the next generation.
Here are your hosts, Dave Adamson and Ashley Bohens.
How's it going, everyone? My name is Dave. I want to welcome you to the Think Orange podcast, episode 43, back here in the bunker. It feels like it's been a while, but I'm here with my co-host, or I'm her co-host. I can never remember.
I think it's that way.
Ash, how are you?
I am so happy.
What is
we're in here together, Dave.
It's been so long, hasn't it?
It has been long, and we're coming up on a year.
Really?
Of this pod.
Oh my gosh, that's amazing. I hope everybody has been enjoying this podcast over that year. You know, I don't know if you know this, last week was a very special Orange event called YMLX.
Yes.
I think I got that acronym right.
You did. Youth Ministry Leadership Exchange.
And I swear, I did a 15-minute little spot, and somebody came up to me afterwards and asked for a Friend of the Pod t-shirt.
Really?
Yes. We have to get these things made. I'm going to look at every producer that is in this room right now. You all need to work out some sort of t-shirt deal because somebody asked me if they could have one.
Somebody came to the XP3 booth and said, it's so good to put faces to names.
Awesome.
I listen to the Think Orange podcast all the time. And they told me to keep singing. So I'm like, okay.
We have to figure out something for today's episode then. Hey, you got to give the fans what they want, right? And they want to hear you sing and they want Friends of the Pod t-shirts. So folks, we are still working on that. Now, today we've got a very special episode. We've got, there's a lot going on in this episode. We're doing things a little bit differently. I'm going to be interviewing Virginia Ward. Now, I know you're a big fan, Ash, of Virginia.
I am, not just because she loves youth ministry and she's very well spoken, but because she sings almost every time I've seen her communicate, and I love it so much.
So you've
on a podcast.
You're like kindred spirits.
We are.
Now, Virginia is, I was hoping you would do this, but I'll do it. She is the Director of Leadership and Mentored Ministries at Gordon Conwell Theological Seminary. That is an amazing title right there. And she is also the Associate Pastor at Abundant Life Church. I had the chance to sit down with her. She is just an incredible woman. She doesn't sing, but you're going to take care of that for us. She doesn't sing during the interview. You'll take care of that, right?
You'll see.
I'm looking forward to it already. So we're going to hear a little bit of an interview with her. And then midway through that interview, we're breaking format just a little bit. We're going to throw to this clip, which is just an incredible clip. It features Reggie Joyner, Kara Powell, people who listen to the podcast on a regular basis know that. But it also, they're talking with Jimmy Mulato, President and CEO of Compassion International. And the stuff that he says about culture, woo, it's going to be game changing.
It's challenging.
It's so challenging. Hey, so it was Valentine's Day earlier this week. Ash, I just want to know, did you have anything going on? Did you do anything special? Anything to report?
Listen, oh my gosh, Dave, that is definitely one way to get feedback on this podcast. But listen, you're never going to believe what happened. So I went to buy myself chocolate covered strawberries because I love them and I feel like I should treat myself to them, right?
Yep.
Of course. I go in there and the lady's like, well, how many do you want? And I'm like, 12, of course.
Wait, you're buying for one.
Hold on. You're going to be just like her because I'm about to say what she said and you're doing the same thing.
Okay.
So she goes, like, what do you want written on this or whatever? I'm like, I don't need anything written on the strawberries. And she's like, wait, are these for you? I'm like, this was at Edible Arrangements. And I go, no, these aren't for me. They're for work. But I thought to myself, what person works a Valentine's shop and says to somebody, like, shames them.
Are these
for you?
You were chocolate strawberry shamed.
Seriously.
Is that even a thing? Hashtag chocolate strawberry shamed. Let's get that trending on Twitter.
Or you can send me a box of them.
Hey, even better.
We should
figure out what is the
Rethink
address of
group
the
group offices, please.
Okay.
Attention, Ashley Bohens.
And the bunker is in the back. So just put to the pod bunker and then figure out the rest yourself. That is awesome. Have you got a favorite, like, love song, Valentine's song, something like that? It's got to be a Disney classic or something.
I was going to ask you the same question, Dave.
Oh.
In honor of Valentine's Day, I feel like you should sing yours and your wife's song.
You don't want to know what me and my wife's song is.
Yes,
actually,
I do.
We've got several. But the one that comes to mind straight away is a classic by Frank Sinatra. Do you know any Frank Sinatra songs?
I know his name and I know he's a musician.
I'm going to reveal it at the end of the podcast. You'll have to stick around to see what the Frank Sinatra song is. Hey, we're going to go straight over to Virginia Ward. But before we do, I just want to call out that the sponsor for this episode is the one and only Orange Conference 2018. Woo! Ash, how excited are you about this?
I love Orange Conference. Are you going to be there this year?
Well, I think I am going to be there. I've got to talk to my manager about whether or not I'm going to be doing things, but I think I'm going to be there.
How does it feel to say I need to talk to my manager?
I just made that up. I actually don't have a manager. I'm going to talk to my wife, let's be honest. Hey, you know, I've got people coming from Australia who they're traveling all the way from Australia for this one and only conference. It is amazing. It is a three-day conference in Atlanta, Georgia, for your entire family ministry team. This is where you can discover how we can work together to do more for the next generation as we explore next year's theme of, do you know what it is, Ash? The theme is
one voice.
One voice. And the idea around that is momentum is never an accident. Realign your team, increase your influence, and communicate more clearly with one end in mind. Grow and connect as a team by attending Orange Conference 2018. Where can they learn more, Ash? Do you know off the top of your head?
TheOrangeConference.com.
You are absolutely amazing. TheOrangeConference.com. Make sure you head there and come and say hello to us while you're at the conference, and maybe we'll have Friend of the Pod t-shirts by then.
Listen, I think we requested them. Was it last year at Orange Conference or Tour?
It was a long time ago.
I know.
All right, we're going to get everybody.
Producer Kevin.
We need to get producer
Clearly,
Kevin onto that.
Clearly, we need to call a meeting.
Yes. Hashtag producer Kevin. Just start that trending as well to get hashtag Friend of the Pod t-shirts up. Hey, let's go straight to Virginia. This is an awesome interview, and we'll throw it straight over to her. We are sitting in the hotel lobby in Austin right now, and we did all this. We went this to these great lengths because we wanted to sit down with Virginia Ward, and this was the only place we could get her, and she's so important to what we're about to talk about today. So, Virginia, I just wanted to first introduce you, but also ask you, give us the skinny on what you're doing, what your title is, where you're working, all that sort of thing.
Okay. Well, thank you for having me here today. I have actually two main capacities that I'm working in. I'm associate pastor at Abundant Life Church in Cambridge, where my husband is the senior pastor.
Yep.
I'm also the assistant dean at Gordon Conwell Theological Seminary, the Boston campus.
The Boston campus.
That's New York. So Boston. It's an A-H. See, that's how you know it's Boston.
I'm Australian. Can you do an Australian accent?
No, I have not been down under yet, darling.
That wasn't bad.
It wasn't bad. Okay.
Oh, my
gosh. I'm going to get there. I'm going to get down
not
under.
Not only are you the smartest person we've ever had in the Think Orange bunker, but you're also the American who's done the best Australian accent that I may have ever heard.
Thank you, darling.
So there you go. That's amazing. Hey, so what we're going to talk about today is one of the main things I want to talk to you about. We'll see where the conversation goes. Okay. But what I wanted to start with is just a few years ago, your church went through something that you call community asset mapping.
Yes.
Can you explain that, what that is for us?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's not a new term or a term that's just for us. It's a term that was actually created some years ago to help churches or to help groups to understand better what's happening in the land around them, as it were.
Okay.
So it's a process that allows you to go out and assess who's there, what are they doing, and how we can best serve their needs. And that's what the purpose of it that we used to do it was to figure out how we can best serve the community that God placed us in. Because we're very much in a neighborhood community. Our church is right in the city of Cambridge, houses, schools, other community groups. So we wanted to really get in there and figure out what our community needed versus what we thought it needed.
So the assets in the community would be buildings, organizations?
And people. It's anything that's in the community. People, buildings, organizations, public, private, anything. It could be that the old lady across the street that watches your church or that watches your house that kind of knows everything in the neighborhood, what we call community stakeholders. And so we wanted to know and to find out from those people as well what they thought.
Okay, so I'm sure some people listening to this right now, when they hear you talking about community asset mapping, they're probably thinking of the Google Earth, a car flying around, just mapping everything. Mm-hmm. But that's not what you're talking about.
No, no, no. It's literally walking your neighborhood and seeing what's there, but also doing the research to say how many schools are there, what kinds of schools are there, how many businesses are there. So you're looking at everything, literally everything, but also everybody in your community. From, as I said earlier, the old lady, but also maybe the kids on the corner, maybe even the drug dealers in your community that are there and more present sometimes in the church. I can tell you what's happening, who's doing what, and what are the needs of the neighborhood.
Well, the fact that we're talking about this implies mm-hmm. that there are churches who aren't doing this and that they're just focused on their own little patch of mm-hmm. land. Is that the case?
Yes, and we were that way. We were really focused internally. We were siloed, and we were looking at ourselves. And especially where in Cambridge, we kind of, just to give you a little bit of a history, the church went through a little change when rent control was lifted. And so the people who lived in the community, they used to walk to church. But when the cost of living in the neighborhood of the church changed, a lot of our people became commuters. So we said, well, how can we still be in touch and figure out the heartbeat and the pulse of our community?
Yeah.
So that meant we needed to get out of the four walls and figure out what was going on and who it was going on with.
Yeah.
And so that made it necessary for us to get out the four walls, talk to people. And some churches aren't doing that. They drive in, they do church, and they drive back out. And so that was a heartbeat and a passion of my husband.
Yeah.
And said, we got to figure out what's going on in our neighborhood.
Yeah, so we typically expect, we build a church up on the hill and mm-hmm. we expect people to come and visit us.
Yes, if we build it, they will come.
Yeah.
You know, and that's not always so. And who comes may not necessarily be the people God wants us to reach.
Oh, that's super powerful. I mean, we're told mm-hmm. to love our neighbor, but how can we do that if we don't actually know anything about our neighbors?
Nothing about our neighbor. It's like being, and that's the same principle we should also live by, that in any neighborhood we live in, we know who's our neighbor on the right, on the left, across the street, or at least we should try to figure out who they are. They might not be your best friends, but at least figuring out who your neighbor is so that you can, if nothing else, know how to pray for them.
Yeah, you can't meet the needs of the community if you don't know what those needs are.
You got it.
That's amazing. And I don't know, You're the dean of the theological college. You go with me on this one. I'm thinking that there's being salt in the community would play into this.
Yes, salt and light. So in order to be salt, to change the flavor of, you got to know what the flavor is. Because otherwise, it's kind of like putting salt on something. It may not need it, or it may need it and you're not using it. You're not applying it. But there's a requirement of us to be the salt, to change the flavor of our communities.
Mm. So I have a theory I want to run by you
and
see how this fits in with the mm-hmm. mapping. And I'm hoping that our producer, Kevin, will just indulge me here.
Okay.
So we hear a lot, you know, Jesus says that if salt loses its saltiness, it's no longer fit for the manure pile.
Mm-hmm.
That used to always make me wonder, when is salt ever fit for a manure pile, right? Because he says it's not fit anymore.
Right.
And so I studied that. And what I realized was back in ancient times, they would use dried manure as fuel. They would burn it.
Right,
and they discovered that if they put salt on it, there was a chemical reaction that happened that caused the fire to burn hotter and brighter for longer.
Wow.
But that process broke the salt down and the chemical reaction didn't happen anymore.
Wow.
So when Jesus said, you know, salt that loses its saltiness is no longer fit for the manure pile, he was actually making a very concerted point.
Yes.
That I believe that as Christians, if we're going to be salt in the world, if we're going to have that chemical reaction that causes God's word to burn hotter and brighter for longer, we need to be mixing with the manure of the world.
Yes, we do. But we don't want to do that.
Yeah.
We don't want to do that. So then we're totally useless.
Yes.
Totally useless.
Yes. We lose our saltiness.
Yes.
And so that's why I like what you said, that it might even be the drug dealer on the corner who we need to be, quote unquote, mapping as a church.
Mm-hmm.
That's powerful. Where did you get, where did this idea come from?
Well, from a book, Mapping Communities Inside and Out by John McKnight, and Critchman is another author there. But these, I learned this actually through the DeVos Urban Leadership Initiative. It was a training program that helped us as urban leaders to understand how to get outside of the four walls of our church and to how to do it effectively. Because we don't want to just go out there and just randomly throw in salt. And we want to make sure that we're being effective in our communities as well. Because sometimes the church, and I don't know if you can imagine this, but sometimes the church offends people outside of its four walls as well. And so we didn't want to do that. So we had hired a consultant through a grant that we got, a Black Church Capacity Building grant from an organization in Boston. So it helped us to have a plan and to be effective. As Jesus says, count the cost. We don't just go to war without counting the cost and making sure we're being effective in our approach.
So practically, how does this play out for Abundant Life on a week-to-week basis?
Mm-hmm. So how it plays out realities are now, we're a lot more intentional about what the needs are in our community. It means that we talk to people.
Yeah.
So we'll talk to the homeless people and everyone. It's something that not only the senior leaders do it, but our ministry leaders, but even our people in the congregation.
Yeah.
Understand, when we have a block party, we talk to people in our neighborhood. We don't just say, this is what we're going to do. We ask, what do you need?
Yeah.
Well, tell us something that you think the church should do. And we're open to the answers.
Yeah.
And we make sure that we take off our offense gear so that we're not all, you know, looking like we're going to war. Tell me really what you think, but make sure I filter it, or make sure you filter it in such a way. No, we really want to hear what they have to say. And for some, it's like your church members park and they block my driveway.
Yeah.
Or what are you doing for the kids in the community?
Yeah.
And so all of those things were very important. And so we had to have conversations with people and then listen to what they said and then apply them.
That's great.
And make changes. And that wasn't easy, but we've been walking that route for a while now.
So I want to come back to something that you said, which for you, I'm sure, makes perfect sense because you've got a picture of it in your head. You said when we have block parties. What do you mean by block parties? Because based on what we're talking about, the typical church might just do a party in their car in the parking lot. And call that a block party.
Okay. Oh, no. This is old school block party. I grew up in the neighborhood where the whole block is shut down. Everybody comes out.
Yeah.
People have a part in it. So what we do is we block off the corner of from where our church is to this next corner where there's a community center.
Yeah.
And so we invite the neighbors, and we have other organizations that partner with us. There's a hospital that partners with us. There are people from the community that come out, and we'll have a bouncy house. We have a barbecue. The grills are going. The food is free.
Yeah.
And in fact, this year we had the Hyatt Hotel donated food as well. So in addition to the regular grilled food, we had barbecue chicken and all this other wonderful stuff. We have a health fair that goes on at the same time so people can get their blood pressure checked and speak to doctors and talk about some of the basic health issues. We give away books and back to school supplies to children and to college students. We give out gift cards so that they can shop and do what they need to do and just bless them while they're in school and make connections that way. And so it's real community. We'll have, sometimes there's a band there, there's a DJ, and then we always have time to dance in the street. So we have dancing in the street, we'll do the Cupid Shuffle, the electric slide, we do it, and our neighbors come out, people come out of their homes because they know we're going to literally be dancing in the street.
Wow.
And so neighbors get to talk to one another and see who's in this building. But they also, we open up our church door for tours. So people can come in and get a tour of the church and meet people and see what's going on. We set up a prayer station. So if someone wants prayer, they can just discreetly go and get prayer. Yeah. Or if they just want to fill out the prayer request and put it in the box. But there's no agenda to it other than meeting your neighbor and finding out from them, how else can we best serve your needs?
And Virginia, obviously, at some point during this block party, somebody shares the gospel, right?
Yes, usually my husband will share a brief word. And I say brief because we're outside it's for the block party. But also to the worship team will minister.
Yep.
And then we also, and I'll be honest, there are a couple of times we have done it where the gospel is shared one-on-one.
Yes.
It's not a holes, let's pause and have a sermon. The sermon is us. We are the salt and the light. We are loving on our neighbors. We're loving on the children that come. We're loving on the homeless people. We walk up to the square that's near our church and we'll invite homeless people down, feed them, give them clothes, whatever they need. And we give them little care packages so that they can socks, toothpaste, toothbrush, little things that we don't think about.
So, I would argue that the gospel is presented from the moment the block party starts until it ends, and just at certain times somebody gets to use words to share it.
Yes.
It sounds like you're sharing it by the things that you were doing.
That's the best way.
And as you're describing that to me, the thought that keeps coming in my head is, man, Jesus always talks about, you know, the kingdom of heaven is like a banquet. The kingdom of heaven is like a man who threw a party.
Yes.
It seems to me, correct me if I'm wrong, you're not just concerned about getting people to heaven. You're concerned about getting heaven to people.
Exactly. Exactly. That's the piece.
That's powerful. That is so powerful. So I guess it's not enough for churches just to hold an event at the church anymore.
No. We've got to get outside. We've got to get out of our Sunday finest and be present and be real and be touchable so that people can see that God lives, and he's not just segmented to Sunday morning between 9 and 1, but that he's present, but also that he's applicable to every day and every hour of their lives.
Yeah, totally agree. One of the things I like to say is, you know, as a church, we often get to connect with people in our community for 1 hour every week on a Sunday. Mm-hmm. But through stuff like this, we can stay connected for the other 167 hours of the week.
There you go.
So good. Well, Virginia, we're going to go and throw to a clip right now of an interview that Kara Powell and Reggie Joyner did with Jimmy Mulatto, who is from Compassion. And once we've heard that clip, I want to ask you a couple of questions on the back end of that.
Okay.
Would you give Jimmy Otto a hand as he comes up here to say it? And every time I get the chance, I have my little black notebook and I'm taking notes as fast as I can in what we talk about. And I learned things from you and your leadership about how to lead Orange and how to lead churches. And I know that you talk about the importance of having a strong culture. And part of the reason that we really wanted Jim to talk today was because as leaders, I don't want you to simply hear about compassion today. I want you to hear about how to lead an organization and how to create a culture. Yeah. Because you think culture is important. Yeah. And you've been there about 3 years. You've transitioned into this role, and you're changing a culture, leading a culture. What does that look like, and what does that mean?
Well, simply define culture just the way life happens, the way you do work, the way you experience work, the way you experience other people in the work context. That's your culture. It just is what it is. Whether you have an initiative around culture or not, you have one. Huh. It's either getting stronger and better or not.
It's good.
So I just read a recent report on 7,000 companies in 105 countries. And they asked these leaders at every level of the organization, what is the most important things that leaders need to do? Building culture was in the top three.
Wow.
So everybody, top to bottom, said building culture is in the top three. Now here's the deal. 75% of the company said they're doing nothing to build their culture. Okay, so wait. So you say it's one of the top most important things for leaders to do, and 75% of the leaders are doing nothing about it.
Yeah.
So I said, you know what? We're going to be intentional about building culture. We're going to be among the 25% of organizations that are actually doing something about it.
That's good. That's good.
And I know as you at Compassion, you're trying to be part of that 25% and do something about it. You've identified five behaviors. Yeah, right. Five behaviors that drive who you are, what you want to be, and your culture. Right. Share those with us. And I have a feeling we're going to want to write these down because these are really good behaviors.
Well, and the first thing you need to do is you kind of need to start describing what is our existing culture. If we were to ask people, what's it like to work here? What's it like to work with people? What are the words that come to mind?
Yeah.
And get a handle on that. And then move over, what would we like it to be? Hmm. Where would we? How would we like work to be? And how would we like to work and interact with people? And that gets really down to a behavioral level.
Yeah.
What are the behaviors you want to see more of?
Yeah.
What are the behaviors you want to see less of?
Nice.
And be intentional about it. Instead of letting culture be defined by whatever someone wants and their own opinion, and new employees come in and they do whatever they, think. So we came up with five behaviors after quite a long process. The first one was that we want everybody to behave like they're here for a reason. There actually is a mission. And so Henry Cloud talks about how every leader has a wake, but two parts to that wake, a people part and a results part. And we know some leaders that are all about the people, but they never get anything accomplished. And then we also have leaders that get a ton done, and they lead a wake of dead bodies in their wake.
Yeah.
And you want the best of results, and you want the best of people.
Yeah.
So we want people to understand that balance.
Yeah.
You're here for a reason, sacrificial commitment to the cause, yes, but it's about people, and it's about results, and we want every leader who creates a wake and every leader that is receiving a wake from someone else for that to be a healthy wake. So you're here for a reason, the mission. Number two, 100% for each other. Huh. Now, of course, we all say we're 100% for each other, right? We don't behave that way. Now, let me give you the diagnostic.
You don't think we behave that way?
Yeah, just read emails. So here's the diagnostic question on, are you really 100% for each other? Are you willing to risk your reputation on the performance of every other teammate on your team? Are you willing to risk your reputation on the performance of any of the team members that are on your team? If you cannot say yes to that, you're not 100% for each other. Wow. You've got to have conversations to say, why wouldn't I? Of course I would risk my reputation on your performance, man. I'm 100% for you.
That's good.
And have the conversations that lead to being 100% for each other. So the next one is, we're serious about growth.
Okay.
Not just yours, okay. Ours and others.
Okay.
We're serious about growth, ours and others. So if I were to ask you, Reggie, like, where is your growth edge right now as a leader?
I would rather you ask Kara that question.
So what do you know about the Bible?
Whoa.
I know a lot about the Bible.
See, okay. But see, he hugged you.
Woman. Doug
would not have hugged you.
That's good. But, so we're serious about our growth. What are you learning? What's the edge of your leadership development, your spiritual formation? What are you learning in Christ right now? There ought to be something, and we got to spur each other on, as the scriptures say, to love and good deeds. So serious about our growth, ours and others.
Do you talk about that as a team? Like, how are we trying to grow? You're sharing that with each other?
Totally. Good. And in our one-on-ones to say, like, what are you learning? What are you reading? And so that's it. We're serious about our growth, ours and others. Another one. Careful with our words.
Hmm.
You know, scriptures talk about the tongue being this evil, and it even says that some of the things that come out of our mouth come straight out of the pit of hell. And that includes Christians. We say some things that are just so unwarranted and not good. And when we say careful with our words, I mean everything. How do you respond when you get a bad email? How do you respond when you get a bad phone call? Do the next people pay because you just came out of a bad meeting? They had nothing to do with the meeting, but they're paying from what you say. And you know, in terms of email, be really careful with the reply all button. I mean, seriously. That is the most abused button in email. Does everybody need to know an issue you've got going with someone? It's just between you and them. Reply all doesn't need to be happening in that deal.
Sure, so that injects poison into a culture.
Yeah, totally.
Now you've
poisoned everybody, you know. So just careful with words and how you say things, the tone you say, and even careful with words when no words are being said, but you're communicating volumes. So that's the tone, that's the body language, everything. So careful with words. And then, you know, the last one is let others in. Behave as let others in. Let others in your life. Be vulnerable with people. Let them get to know you. Have empathy for them. And then also letting others in your plans. One of the worst things that happens that creates silos is that teams don't share their plans with other teams.
Yeah.
You talk about children's ministry and youth ministry and family ministry and the church ministry. It ought to be the ministry. There's no sub anything.
Yeah.
It's one ministry, and we got to behave as if, you know, together, like we're one team. And that can't happen till you let others in and you let others in your plans. We don't want silos. Interesting little definition here. You know what the Latin definition of the word diabolical is?
I don't.
To compartmentalize. To fragment.
Wow.
So if your church, if your ministry, if your organization has a bunch of silos, what that actually means is it's diabolical.
Hmm.
So let's don't call it silos. You know, let's call it what it is and let's tear them down.
That's good. Break down the walls.
So in Kara and Reggie's interview with Jimmy, they talked about the importance of inviting others into your plans. So what steps can a church take to involve other community leaders in planning and executing events and resources that they offer in their buildings?
That's a great question. So for us, some of the steps that we took is we literally went to different organizations. We literally went to people outside. We did surveys and asked people questions.
Yep.
This is what, and we even shared with them, this is a program we think is necessary or maybe needed in this community. What do you think?
Yeah.
And we gave them the opportunity to rip it apart, tear holes in it, shoot it down, speak into it.
Yeah.
And for us, the thought we originally planned for our community was totally opposite of what they needed. And the community members said, no, that's not what we need. We need this. And so we scrapped our plans and we changed it. We also make sure that we have relationships with the city councilors. We also talk to the businesses in the community. So we walk around and literally with a clipboard and asking people, what do you think? And of course, that takes time. You can't do that overnight.
Yeah.
So it meant that we had to plan it out and we had to be patient with the process.
Yeah.
But we used the relationships that we had as well as other people in the community, people who lived in the the community, we actually talk to them and say, wow, you live here. What do you think? You see kids or you see seniors or you see the neighborhood. What do you think we should do? So we didn't just sit in our high mountains and descend, come down with the Ten Commandments and say, this is what thou shalt do in this community. We allowed the people who live there to speak into it, as well as city officials, as well as some of the community stakeholders, as I mentioned earlier, to say yes, and to also partner with them. Because some of the things we thought we were going to do were already being done. So they didn't need the church to step in and do it. They needed us to help resource them.
Why would you try to do it better than an organization that's already killing it in the community? Exactly. Why don't you just partner with them?
Exactly. So we just stepped aside and we refer people there. And
that's
say, okay,
so good.
Go here.
How often during this process did you as a church leadership have to change your plans?
Very often, especially in the initial phases. We literally, and it was painful, we had to take our thinking and suspend it because we had a plan. We had prayed and fasted and God had given us a Shandala vision. And we had to go, okay, God, you have another plan. So we had to suspend our thinking and say, okay, God, let us now pray and give you a blank slate instead of saying, Lord, here's our framework, bless this. And so that was hard, but we had to suspend it. And once we did, things just started flowing, information started coming in, and then the community began to really trust us because they felt like we cared for them.
So what benefits have you as a church seen from this approach? Because there's people who are listening right now who are probably thinking, A, this seems like a lot of work, but B, it sounds like maybe a direction that they want to go in. What benefits have you seen from a church perspective?
Well, first of all, the community trusts us.
Yeah.
So they will come to us with issues.
Which is huge.
And that takes time. You're building relationships as well with young people and you're building relationships with families. People from the community will actually come now.
Yeah.
And there are people who would say, before I never saw that church open or I didn't know what was going on in there. But through the block parties and through surveying people and talking to our neighbors. And this is something you don't just do once. We're actually about to start this process again. Kind of like if you think of it in terms of the census, you have to keep doing it. Yeah. It's an ongoing process.
Yeah.
But we have seen the trust factor built. We've seen people from the community come. And some people just come for those events. And some people come also for services. Yeah. Other people come or they'll send their children. So we have a big outreach now, a big connection with the youth in the community that now say, oh, that's my church.
Yeah.
Even if they come once a month, that's my church.
That's amazing. What does the church have to lose? What does a general church have to lose by isolating itself from their community?
Oh, you lose a lot. You lose the love and respect.
Yeah.
But you also lose the fact that you're not influencing. You're not being the salt and light. You're losing the purpose for which, to me, I believe that God has set you there.
Totally.
That God sets us, and he sets us in those places. Mm. And if we lose the touch and we lose our voice, we lose the prophetic voice that we're supposed to be to that community. And I think that's a call.
So for the person who's listening to this, maybe they're listening in their car right now. Mm-hmm. Maybe they're sitting around with some of their church leaders or something like that. And they're saying, I wonder what the first one or two steps is to make this happen in our church. Mm-hmm. What would your advice to that person be?
First of all, I would say pray.
Okay.
Because we want to jump and do. And to, after you've prayed, to then begin to look up some information on what community asset building is.
Yeah.
And this is whether you're in an urban environment or even suburban environment. Maybe there's nothing physically surrounding your church, but you can at least start with the community of people who attend your church and assess who's there, what are they a part of, and how can we better connect and meet their needs. And then start having conversations. Maybe you started with some of the stakeholders in your community. Reach out to the city councils, reach out to the businesses, and make a list of what's in our community and begin to reach out and begin to extend your hand to have conversations with them to find out some information about what's there.
That's so helpful. There's such some great first steps for churches. Mm-hmm. Virginia, I just want to thank you so much for coming all this way into our little bunker here.
You're welcome.
It's been a pleasure to have you in here. I'm so thrilled to hear what you guys are doing in Boston. And I'm so thrilled to hear your Boston accent come out every now and again when you say park.
Mm-hmm.
And you said car.
Yeah.
I love it. It's awesome. Thank you so much for being in the bunker with us
and being
such a great friend of the pod.
Thank you.
Wow, was that just an amazing interview or what? Virginia Ward, my gosh.
I want to be like her when I grow up.
So do I. I mean, that stuff that she was talking about, asset mapping, that's the sort of thing that I think churches, they want to know about, but they don't know how to do it.
Right.
And so I really love just having that conversation with her about the importance of partnering with the people and the organizations that are already within your community. Again, that, we think about that in a big picture, but she goes down into such great detail.
You know, it made me think of the church that I attend, Gwinnett Church, mm-hmm. who the lead pastor is Jeff Henderson,
yeah.
which we've had on the pod before.
Yeah.
And he does such a good job of this. Mm-hmm. I've really learned a lot. And like he'll send out a tweet or the church will send out a tweet when a new business is opening and tell the church members to go there and enjoy donuts there or coffee or whatever. And I just think it's a really unique way to partner with the community because then the community wants to partner with you more.
Yeah. And you're not asking the community to come to you. You're actually going out to them.
Right.
It makes it feel a lot more integrated,
right.
which I absolutely love. And that can change the culture of a community, which I mean, is something that Jimmy Mulatto talked about, the idea of, man, that was powerful stuff.
When he asked that question about being 100% for each other.
Yeah.
What was it? Are you willing to risk your reputation on the performance of any of the team members?
Ooh, that was
on your
good.
Team? I was like, wow, that is really challenging. Like, of course my answer is yes, but
that was super powerful, super convicting as well, because nobody puts it out just that, like straight up like that. I really love that. I love what he said. You have a culture, whether you try to have one or not.
Right. And it's either getting better or not, it's not.
Man, like, how often do you go into work thinking about staff culture? Probably not very often. In fact, he said 75% of organizations aren't actively building a culture, but it impacts so much of what we do because we all are aware of the staff culture anyway.
Yeah, I think it's so much easier to think about staff culture when things aren't going well.
Mm.
Like when you're angry about something,
yeah.
but then when they're going well, it's like, it's hard to stay motivated to keep building it in that direction.
Hey, that's really good. That's very insightful right there. And I think we can get caught up thinking that, well, he's the CEO of Compassion. He has to think, he's got mm-hmm. thousands of staff. He probably has to think about staff culture. But what is the culture in your volunteer team? Mm-hmm. What is the culture in your church team? If you're leading a student ministry, the small group leaders that you have, what is the culture that you're building there?
Right.
Is that an important thing, do you think?
Well, of course, that's going to be what keeps people like retain leaders.
Yeah, totally agree. Well, there was so much great content in this episode. I'm sure you are going to want to go to the show notes. And to find them, you just need to go to thinkorangepodcast.com, thinkorangepodcast.com. That's where we've got a whole bunch of pull-out quotes and links that you can get extra information from. And Ash, what do we want people to do?
We would love a rating, 5 stars, please.
totally
and review
stars.
On Apple Podcasts.
Yes.
Or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Yeah, we certainly want that. We'd also love for you to subscribe to the podcast as well. You can do that on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, SoundCloud, wherever it is. And share this with a friend. All those different podcast avenues have ways that you can share this on social media, share it with a friend, email it to somebody else. We would love for you to do that because we want to get the word out. Now, before we do our final sign off, I just want to do a call back to something we said earlier in the episode. I promised I would
You're
do
gonna
it.
Sing?
I didn't
Frank
say
Sinatra.
I would sing.
Well,
I didn't
I
say
just...
I would sing. I said I would tell everybody what the song was. The song is All the Way by Frank Sinatra. Do you know it?
I have never heard that song.
Does anybody else know it? No, but everybody's shaking their head around me.
Dave, I mean...
When somebody loves you, it's no good unless she loves you all the way.
Dave, you just really committed. I'm
totally
so proud of you.
I went in. I was proud of myself.
You did.
Well, just let's get a review on that.
I... I seriously, that needs to be like, we need to blow social media up right now because Dave Adamson just sang on the Think Orange podcast. It's taken a year.
And I sang it for my beautiful wife. Happy Valentine's Day, babe.
Aww.
Hey, as always, when you think next generation,
think orange.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Think Orange podcast.
Join us next time for more ideas and conversations to help you influence the next generation.
For more episodes and show notes, visit thinkorangepodcast.com.